Okay, it's about 1:20. We broke for lunch. Mr. Hager was on the stand. Is there any reason for Mr. Hager to come back? Commissioners, anyone have any more questions for him? Load up for him over lunch?
Mm-hmm. I do not.
Okay. Counsel?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Zimser, you can call your next witness.
NSP calls Mr. Paul Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, I think you were here when I read the admonition about perjury. Okay. Would you raise your right hand, please? You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Simpson.
Mr. Johnson, good afternoon. Your direct testimony has been stipulated into the record, and so I offer Mr. Johnson for cross-examination.
Mr. Shue.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think Commissioner Kalk spoke about this early, and there's a condition precedent. The commission approval is a condition precedent to actually this PPA going forward, right?
That is correct.
I know you're able to waive that. I think you also stated in your testimony.
Yes.
All right. Do you anticipate that you'd probably be waiving this, waiving that condition precedent if the commission ends up denying that?
Well, the PPA, as you rightly stated, offers different options for how we might handle the guidance and decision that we get from the commission as a result of today. And those executives of NSP would be the ones that would make that decision. Those options include waiving it, termination, and then there's a lapse of time that also joins into that as well.
It's just one other area that I had some questions about, and from page 16 of your testimony, and it has to do with the mitigation of financial risks from the PPA. And I'm not sure if I really understood the process you were speaking about. Starting on line 7 or line 8, it says, conversely, as mentioned before, if the circumstances warrant, the developer can reduce the aggregate nameplate capacity of the PPA by eliminating phases and making the agreed-upon capacity buy-down payment to the company. I was wondering if you could explain how that generally would work within the PPA.
Yes, the nameplate that's offered as a maximum is 100 megawatts, and the PPA provides for different levels of reduction below that. If Geronimo decides that it cannot achieve that by the COD date.
So that would likely depend on meeting deadlines then.
That is correct. And their decision as far as whether to proceed with the price risk of phases that would not be eligible to the 30% ITC or not proceeding with some of those phases to avoid that risk.
Okay. And would that likely change the price as well? I mean, do you lose economies of scale or anything of that matter?
No, their price is fixed. That would not change.
Okay. I believe that's all the questions I have at this time. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
We don't have any questions.
Commissioners, Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Paul, for your filed testimony. I appreciate that, Zed. It's all filed. We've read it. So I just have one line of question. You talked about the executives at NSPXL would make the decision. Aren't you an executive at NSP that makes this decision as far as provides input?
No, I'm not an executive that makes a decision, and yes, I offer being asked to offer decision support information.
So who is an executive at NSP that makes this decision? Is Ms. McCartan? Will she be? I'm trying to figure out who makes this decision. Because when we ask the question, it's like, well, XL makes it. We take all of our people, but nobody will ever say, is this a Ben Folke decision? Is this Laura's decision? Is this Chris's decision? Whose decision is this to whether we're going to do it or not, depending what North Dakota does?
Well, I would think that Chris Clark would have a say in that because he's president of the Minnesota NSP operating company.
So is it – well, and that's maybe a question to get Laura back up here and kind of flesh that out. I'm just curious, that was kind of what we talked about earlier. So what will you advise if the commission approves this? What would you advise? If the commission doesn't approve it, what would you advise?
I think my position would be to present the facts and analysis that would give them the information to make that decision.
Okay, so what would you say? I'm asking you that.
I don't have the result of today.
Well, the two scenarios, either we accept it or we reject it. If we accept it, what would you say? If we reject it, what would you say?
Again, I would offer the pros and cons of analysis based on what direction you provide, and they would weigh that to make a final decision.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchik.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate having you here. The focus of your testimony is basically to highlight or outline the how the companies, how this project fits a need at a reasonable cost. And can you just walk through your analysis of how this is a reasonable cost?
Sure. The strategist model, which is our resource planning model, is designed to evaluate total system costs. We added in the Aurora contract into that model to determine what that impact would be on system costs, to determine the cost impacts of this. In addition to that, getting to the reasonable part of it, we did consider the other benefits of the PPA, which would go to things that others have already mentioned here today, and that is its ability to displace market purchases to the tune of 1.1 million megawatt hours, and also to displace gas consumption to the tune of about 20 billion cubic feet over the 20-year term of the PPA. In addition to that, there is anticipated carbon restrictions that may be coming, and it offers the company the benefit of having another resource that has no carbon emissions with it to supplement or help with any compliance requirements that may result from the Clean Power Plan. Further, it offers additional RECs that could be used in a variety of ways, renewable energy credits.
So if you take out the carbon restrictions, because those are unknown, and what they will be or what their value or cost might be, we don't know that today. So take that off the table. And since you've already met the renewable energy goals in North Dakota, let's take that one off the table as well. For the RECs, what's the value of this project just from, you know, from a cost standpoint for its price and the two benefits that you did quantify, displacing market purchases and the place displacing gas fuel costs? Can you point to that model in here?
Well, the two sensitivities that we did run were, as we talked about before, high and low gas.
Okay, is that the table, not table 9 again?
Yep.
Does that take into consideration, does your strategist model provide a value to the displacement of the market purchases of energy and the fuel, the gas fuel costs that would be saved?
Yeah, and that's reflected in those sensitivities.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's table 9?
Yes.
On page 39?
Are you in the application?
That is in the application, but you have a number of charts in your
so I'm trying to go between
testimony
and
two.
Application here. So if you look at your, if you want to go to table 9 in the application, is that where you're at?
Yeah.
But as we talked about, the high gas would actually see a lower cost. I mean, the market price and then the higher gas prices that the Geronimo would provide a $18 million benefit there. If the markets are off, meaning that for some reason the utility could not have the benefit of market purchases, the cost reduction would be about $13 million.
So when you calculate these, just tell me what numbers you're the $18 million is high gas over just the $62 million?
Yes. It's the delta.
That's the delta, but I don't see any calculation of a delta, say you use something else instead. Like, say you didn't do the solar.
Well, the system is going to draw more higher capacity factor or lower capacity factor to meet the overall energy needs. Depending upon what that price is, you'll use more or less of a certain energy resource. for terms of solar now as and wind, that's offered in first because those are treated as must-run units. So the variability in terms of how much gas, how much coal is used is fitting around that. But the specific units that are used to meet that need is based on their price. So if gas prices go up, the gas generation would typically go down. The purchases would go down, and our own units, if they're lower price, would go up in the case of adding the other resources that we've talked about to our mix.
I know you guys have tried a few different ways to get me to understand this, but I still do not understand this, why this is better than a gas purchase, a gas unit. How is it saving money? How is it a better hedge against gas than even what you're showing more gas here? I'm not following
if you were to look at the 20 billion cubic feet of gas savings over the life as shown on page 33 of the application.
Okay.
And you were to take a market price of gas today of, say, $3 a million BTU, in today's numbers, that would be about $60 million of benefit.
Okay, so say that one more time.
So if the natural gas, if you were to take all of that gas and put it into apply today's gas price to that of $3.
So which gas? Point it back to the units that you'd be substituting. All of what gas?
All of the gas that's displaced by the energy produced from Aurora project.
So show me where that displaced gas is on the chart.
It's on table 3.
Okay.
So if you go in with the base assumptions, use the base assumptions and the adjustment on that base consumption of 14,066 billion cubic feet, that there's a reduction of 20 over the life of the 20-year term. A reduction of 20 BCF.
And then and that's over 20 years?
Yeah, I'm just saying if you took all that gas and you applied a price of today's gas price.
Now I'm following you. So what
that would be $60 million.
Okay. So that's where you...
I'm just trying to give you a number to that. And then the market purchases is 1.1 million megawatt hours or 1.1 gigawatt hours over... That's the amount of market purchases that were displaced as far as a magnitude over the 20-year period.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so say the only other comparable, if you were to do something different in terms of a different type of resource, might be wind, where you could get rid of the fuel costs. It's similar.
Yes.
Have you, would you argue that wind would be a lot more affordable?
Well, we know that gas prices generally today are lower than solar prices, yes.
Wind, you mean? Wind prices
are... Excuse me. Sorry. Wind is lower than solar, correct.
And so why didn't you guys push for more wind instead of this?
Well, I think...
Since you didn't really need it to meet the solar mandate.
Well, I think the purpose of this presentation today was to take a project that's been approved in Minnesota and offer it up and with analysis and presentation for your consideration.
I get that. I know that. But why, when you were making the case to Minnesota, if you don't need this for the wind mandate there, you can meet that with the other 187 megawatt portfolio. Why didn't you guys offer, if you just need capacity and you want carbon benefits and you want a hedge on gas, why didn't you propose more wind and have it be more affordable for customers?
Well, the RFP that we did complete in 2013 resulted in 750 megawatts of additional wind. And our plan before you, as far as the resource plan, adds another 1,800 megawatts at different times. With the option in the plan to actually go early if there was a PTC available to do so. Without the PTC being available, we push the wind additions out a little bit further because of the economic difference of that. The solar piece of that is the 187. There is the 187 RFP has very competitive pricing, and it was largely designed for the solar energy standard compliance. The Aurora project before you today was a result of the capacity acquisition process. And we did encourage, because of the changing need profile from being 150 to 500 initially and then changing dramatically over a period of 2 or 3 years to a net surplus, we did encourage the commission to reconsider ordering some of those resources that were before them in the CAPCON docket. Mm-hmm. They went forward and saw it was best because of the variability, I think, that Kurt alluded to in that need, to go ahead and take a conservative approach and approve several of those projects, one of them being the Aurora project.
And then if you're saying, it sounds to me like you're saying you chose this because they chose this. Minnesota chose it. The Minnesota Commission.
Well, we accepted their decision.
Did they consider wind instead? Did they consider some wind projects for the same capacity need?
No, no wind bids were submitted as far as I recollect.
Is that because they weren't requested? Was that not part of the RFP to solicit?
The RFP didn't specifically request renewable proposals, is my understanding.
It did not?
Did not.
Okay.
It did not specifically request renewable proposals.
Is your sense that if you had wanted wind, you could have gotten it?
Well, we wouldn't. Our going into the RFP or the CAPCON process there, it wasn't necessarily anticipated that a non-thermal, non-dispatchable resource would be considered.
And so you guys didn't even, are you saying that you wanted a dispatchable resource and you got this instead?
Well, typically those kinds of RFPs in the past and up until that point generally receive more thermal responses than renewable responses, such as the solar project. Mm-hmm. So that was a unique attribute, I think, of this particular capacity acquisition process, is they did receive the Aurora project proposal.
How much say did you have in what Minnesota picked, you being Xcel Energy?
How much say? Well, we provide information to support what we endorse or are proposing for approval. And we also offered information several times during the CAPCON process to augment the need profile to be much less than it was initially, and also encourage the commission to delay some of those decisions because of the need change being much less than initially forecast. And they chose not to accept that and proceeded with a much more conservative approach to the Minnesota process.
So is it accurate for me to conclude that even the company thought that a better approach was to not do this right now, but the Minnesota Commission looked at different circumstances and decided this was the most prudent?
The commission disagreed with our encouragement to defer some of these projects because of the need change profile. They went ahead and made that conservative order and decision, and we've accepted that.
Okay. I think that's all my questions. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Commissioner Christman.
I just have kind of some general questions about the resource planning part of your position. It all sounds so simple because you guys refer to strategist almost like it's a human being so often. It's like, strategist said, this is what we do. And it sounds very simple, you know, but I'm sure it's more detailed than what you kind of make it sound like. So I'm going to use the Black Dog 3 and 4 plants is just an example. So there are roughly about 200 megawatts. I think it was at 198. So if they were running full capacity, what would, just for the purpose of the discussion, be a cost of power for you from them, do you suppose?
Black Dog 3 and 4?
Yes.
Full unit?
Yes, if that if those plants were running full capacity? And
I don't know right off the top of my head what that, in terms of total dollars or
per megawatt hour, per kilowatt, or
I don't know right off the top of my head what that number is, but it was getting to the point where it was non-economic to run them, and that's contributed to their retirement.
Maybe I started off with a bad example to get where I'm trying to go. Let's say any baseload power plant, if it's running full tilt, as much as it can reasonably go, it's going to have a certain amount of costs. Is it fair to say that if you only use it 50% of its capability, that the cost per unit is going to be higher?
Well, the fixed costs per unit of output definitely would go higher. The variable costs are specific to 1 megawatt hour. It costs so much money per megawatt hour to produce. So the fixed costs spread over fewer megawatt hours would definitely go up.
Go up. Okay, so if you're using it completely, let's say it's X, and if you only use it half time or something less than full time, it's X plus something. When you calculate the costs of different options for acquiring power, you find an option that is less than that baseload plant. And so do you just look at that and okay, now it's cheaper than what we're getting power from the baseload plant? Or do you also calculate in that, but when we need the baseload plant, though, it's going to cost more than what it would have had we been using it all the time? Is that factored in?
Yes. That's factored in. And we look at, you know, there's different duty cycles, meaning different kinds of power facilities are designed to run at much higher capacity factors on an ongoing basis, and some are designed to run at very low capacity factors, like a combustion turbine. So one has high fixed costs, like a coal plant, and low variable costs, and a combustion turbine would have lower fixed costs and higher variable costs. It, depending up, that's why you would want, depending upon what the need is in the market or in the power supply analysis, it would pick or favor one unit, one type of resource over another, depending upon what the need is.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. I have no other questions.
Mr. Simpson, any redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll try to be brief. I just want to talk a little bit about the CAPCON docket, Mr. Johnson. Would it be fair to say that when the Track 2 process is employed in Minnesota, essentially all of the competitors to the company's process must all bid at the same time? Is that correct?
That is correct.
And when they do so, does that then create the group of resources that the Minnesota Commission may consider under that process?
That is correct.
And in the CAPCON that occurred in Minnesota, it was can you tell us who bid in?
The Invenergy, not all, I don't know the entire list, but Invenergy, Calpine, NSP with Black Dog 6, and then Aurora, Geronimo with Aurora.
And NSP also bid into the Hankinson projects, correct?
Hankinson projects, correct.
Okay. So at, so.
And GRE, excuse me.
Okay.
GRE on a capacity sale.
Yeah. And about how long was that CAPCON process?
About 2.5 years.
Okay. And at the end of the process, what were the resources that the Minnesota Commission selected through that process?
They selected the Calpine-Mankato combined cycle expansion, the Black Dog 6 combustion turbine, and the Geronimo's Aurora 100-megawatt distributed solar project.
And that outcome wasn't necessarily consistent with what the company had advocated for throughout the process. Is that correct?
That is correct.
After that process was completed, did the company go ahead and analyze the ultimate outcome of the Minnesota Commission's decision?
Yes, they did.
And based on that decision, did you guys essentially reach a conclusion that the outcome was reasonable?
Yes, we did.
And was that conclusion essentially based on looking at the totality of the portfolio that was approved by the Minnesota Commission?
That is correct.
Can you help explain how, if you take a portfolio view of those resource selections, how the Geronimo PPA fits into that general type of portfolio?
Yes. It shows it on Table 9. Table 9 of my testimony, or Table 9 on page 39 of the application, which shows that if you take Geronimo, Calpine, and Black Dog 6, under the base, there's a net benefit on a PVRR basis of $20 million. A greater value if we were to apply the 2011 forecast, and then high gas savings, markets off their savings, and then under Minnesota assumption their savings. The only one that does not have a net savings would be low gas.
And Mr. Johnson, those net savings are lower than if the Geronimo Solar PPA was not included in that portfolio, correct?
Correct.
But additionally, the Geronimo Solar PPA provides some qualitative benefits that when you look at an all-gas portfolio and then you add solar, that also went towards your thinking, did it not?
Yes, in terms of power supply diversity objectives.
And would that also include the ability to use large-scale dispersed solar on the system and gaining operative experience with that?
Yes, absolutely.
And so, again, would you say that the totality of the circumstances based on the portfolio selected by the Minnesota Commission helped the company accept that outcome, notwithstanding what it argued in the dockets?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I have nothing further.
Mr. Hsu, follow up.
Just one, Your Honor. So when making the selection, the selections that Minnesota PUC did make, though, they were taking into consideration their environmental externalities, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. No other questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no questions.
Mr. Koch.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one question, Paul. Will you define reasonable for me?
Reasonable, and my understanding would be not only just cost basis alone, but other considerations that are typical to look at when you do long-term planning. And to make, say, the objective we had for our resource plan is to make it robust, where you look at those particular strong influences that are on the horizon, and you look at how our resource would provide benefit against those potential outcomes and future circumstances.
But is reasonable 2 + 2 = 4? Is reasonable easy to define just like that?
It's not strictly a quantitative result.
So different people can view what reasonable is differently?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Paul, can you tell me what if your company had reached the conclusion after evaluating the portfolio directed by the commission that it wasn't a good idea? What would your options have been at that point?
I don't clearly understand all the process options that we could have taken.
Do you have any options? I mean, did you have any choice but to find it reasonable and the right thing to do once they told you that this is what you had to do?
As far as the procedural guidance on that, I would defer to counsel as far as the specific procedural options for that.
If the council can answer that question, I'd be interested in knowing if you have any options.
Certainly, Commissioner. We always have the option to reconsider or to request that the commission rehear their order. Several requests for reconsideration were filed in Minnesota. We provided answers to those, frankly, in support of the Minnesota Commission's order after we had evaluated when it was ordered. That petition for reconsideration is also a precondition under Minnesota law to appeal such an outcome. So if we had petitioned for reconsideration, we would have also preserved the opportunity to appeal. And those would have been mainly the options.
So some folks did petition?
Yes.
To reconsider. Can you tell me who?
The XL Large Industrials petitioned for reconsideration. And I believe Invenergy, who was a loser in the docket, also petitioned for reconsideration.
And what ultimately happened with those petitions?
I believe they were denied.
Okay. So if they deny your petition to reconsider, that's the end of it?
Yes. I mean, you still reserve the right to appeal, but
okay.
Those would be the procedural options that were available based on that docket.
Procedurally, has the company successfully appealed or had them reconsidered in the past?
The latest request for reconsideration the company filed with Minnesota that I'm aware of was in the last rate case, and that petition was denied.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Cressman, anything further for Mr.
Johnson? I do not, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, you can step down. Thank you. Mr. Simpson.
We have no further witnesses, Your Honor.
Mr. Hsu.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Oh, excuse me.
I'm just wondering
if Commissioner Kalk.
Usually how we want to approach this, but I think Commissioner Kalk wanted Ms. McCartan to come back.
That's right. We're happy to recall Ms. McCartan if you'd like, Commissioner.
Do you want a couple minutes before?
We'd appreciate at least a couple. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I'll give you a heads up while you're going to deliberate, too. I'm going to ask you why I shouldn't deny this with prejudice.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you that question, too.
5 minutes, Mr. Simpson?
That would be perfect. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, back on the record. It's about 2 p.m. You recall Ms. McCartan?
Yes, Your Honor. The Northern States Power Company recalls Ms. Laura McCartan to the stand.
Ms. McCartan, just a reminder, you're still under oath?
Yes, Your Honor. Is this on? Can you hear me? Everybody hear me? Okay, all right.
Okay.
Your Honor, we defer to Commissioner Calk.
Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Laura, for coming back up here. The earlier today we visited about, you know, what happens if we don't agree with this. But it just, to be frank, as this day has unfolded, and Commissioner Fedorchuk's line of question was probably the best line of questioning I've heard. But it fleshed out to me that there's no way in my mind that you're not going to do this as a company, given all the things that have transpired. But do you still maintain that you might not do this?
Commissioner, I can't tell you at this point what that decision would be with respect to, we need to have the decision from this commission, and we need to go back and evaluate that in the full context of all the factors that need to be weighed, and I can't tell you what that decision would be.
But how can we say that with what's transpired with the Minnesota Commission overriding what you said, basically, and the court case fleshing itself out? It seems like you're going to do this.
Commissioner, there are contractual provisions that come into play here,
So how does that flow then? If we would say no, then all of the previous Minnesota decisions and all the appeals, and you walk that dog again?
Oh, Commissioner, I understand the what you're suggesting.
I'm just trying to understand.
My understanding is there are certain contractual provisions that contemplate different courses of action. Should we end up in a position where we don't get full cost recovery of our costs for this project?
Would that cause the Minnesota Commission to change their decision? Would they open up the hearings again?
Commissioner, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I believe the Minnesota Commission is aware because they have approved and seen those provisions. But how that process would unfold, I don't know.
Okay, and then the next question, I gave you the heads up on it. Minnesota Commission appears sent a very strong signal. They went all the way to they're going to ride this thing no matter what. So why shouldn't I send back an equally as strong signal and dismiss this thing with prejudice so I never see it again? Why shouldn't I do that?
Commissioner, if you dismiss with prejudice, then in our understanding and belief is that that is the final decision about any cost recovery from a portion of this project that would otherwise come from our North Dakota commissioners.
Why shouldn't I do that? Minnesota's committed to doing this no matter what you told them, and you found it reasonable, but still they're committed to do this. I'm equally as committed to not forget about cost and need, so why shouldn't I push back just as hard as I possibly can under North Dakota statute?
Commissioner, clearly this commission will make a decision about what is prudent for North Dakota customers. I don't know legally whether the provision of with prejudice, that I think that causes the concern because it closes the door for any working out any, potential cost recovery under certain conditions.
In the last solar case, you brought that up as a key issue, and in our final decision, we didn't. We left it open because it was a different set of facts, and quite honestly, the Minnesota Commission, in my mind, was not nearly as aggressive then as they've been here. So I just wanted to get your response back to that. So thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I have no questions.
Counsel?
Anything further, Your Honor?
Mr. Jeff Kotsako?
Nothing, thanks.
Just real quickly on redirect, just to make sure the record's clear. Ms. McCartan, this was the first competitive acquisition process or Track 2 process that's ever occurred in Minnesota. Is that correct?
That's correct. The first in Minnesota, the first for XL Energy.
So if this commission were to not grant the ADP with or without prejudice, we really are in somewhat uncharted, at least procedural territory, with what our next steps would be in Minnesota. Is that correct?
That's true.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Counsel, any follow-up to that?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
No, sir.
Hey, commissioners?
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. You can step down, Mr. McCartan. Mr. Simpson, what's next?
The company has no more witnesses. We rest.
Does the commission have any witnesses?
Yes, Your Honor. At this time, we'd like to call Michael Diller.
Okay. Mr. Diller. You've heard the admonition an untold number of times, so I'll just have you raise your right hand. Promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I promise to tell the truth to the nearest of my ability.
Mr. Hsu.
Mr. Diller, PSC Exhibit 1 has already been, that your pre-filed testimony has already been stipulated in the record. Are there any changes you'd like to make?
No, sir.
Proceed.
I have a few opening comments. I wrote before my three-day golf binge in Canada, and so hopefully they're still applicable today. Commissioners, I want to, and good afternoon, Judge. Commissioners, I want to thank you for entrusting me with the responsibility of reviewing and sharing my thoughts on this 20-year purchase power agreement with Aurora Solar. And before I get into that, I'd also like to thank the NSP team for the trust that we have been able to develop during these difficult times when North Dakota and Minnesota energy policies are diverging. It would be easy for NSP to focus its efforts on meeting Minnesota policies since 75% of its business is in Minnesota. But I think this team, all of this team, has been instrumental in raising our status within the company, and it's beginning to treat us like the sovereign state that we are, recognizing our needs more than ever and working to address them. Trust in the regulatory process is very important. Trust is difficult to earn and very easy to lose. So full disclosure, accurate information, and effective communication are essential if we all want to be successful. And I appreciate all of their efforts in this regard. Today, our jurisdictional difficulties continue in that the Minnesota Commission, on its own volition, has ordered NSP to enter into this agreement with Aurora Solar. It's a very interesting case in terms of its arrival through the regulatory process. It's come about as a result of NSP filing a certificate of need for additional capacity with the Minnesota Commission way back in 2011. In that proceeding, NSP proposed to replace two coal plants at Black Dog Generating Plant with two large gas turbines. The Minnesota Commission closed that case and opened a competitive resource acquisition process for capacity resources so that other entities could compete to provide the desired generation capacity, track two, if you will. I remember first seeing that, and I was both amazed and concerned when I saw that a solar project was submitted as a capacity resource. The sun doesn't shine in at nighttime, and it doesn't always shine in the daytime if there are clouds in the sky, and so it is not a true capacity resource. For that reason, I was sure the proposal would not be selected by the Minnesota Commission, but I was wrong. Throughout the regulatory process in Minnesota, NSP argued for delaying resource additions. In 2011, NSP withdrew its certificate of need application, stating that it would not need additional capacity until after 2014. In 2013, NSP filed its competitive resource acquisition process proposal to build three 215-megawatt simple-cycle combustion turbines, two in North Dakota, one in Minnesota, to address its projected capacity deficit in the 2017 to 2019 time period. In 2014, NSP tried to convince the Minnesota Commission to delay ordering additional resources because new and refined load forecasts were showing that existing capacity was now sufficient through 2023. Nevertheless, the Minnesota Commission ordered NSP to enter into this contract and others, including approving Black Dog, a self-build project. In North Dakota, NSP filed for an advanced determination of prudence for a suite of solar projects known as the Solar Portfolio. Last month, this commission found that NSP's solar portfolio proposal was not prudent and denied its application. That proposal would have added $14 million in present value dollars to NSP's overall system-wide cost. In this case, Aurora Solar will add $62 million in present value revenue requirements. In this case, Aurora Solar is for 100 megawatts compared to the solar portfolio of 187 megawatts. In other words, this project adds four times the additional system cost for one-half the size, or approximately one-half the size of the solar portfolio. While a levelized cost for Aurora was not included in the application, it is clear that it is a lot more expensive than the solar portfolio project secured through a more robust competitive bidding process. Commissioners, if you didn't like the solar portfolio, you really don't like this one. In the interest of time, my testimony in the solar portfolio case was quickly adapted for this proceeding. Therefore, my testimony should look very familiar to you. In summary, NSP does not need this additional capacity or energy to serve its North Dakota ratepayers. It's expensive, and it's only contracted for because of an order by the Minnesota Commission to do so. The proposal is inconsistent with least cost planning and should be denied. If the Commission denies granting advanced determination of prudence for Aurora Solar, NSP can get out of the Aurora contract. Of course, I think this will likely lead Aurora and NSP to seek full cost recovery from Minnesota, which is exactly where it belongs. Denying ADP here will require Minnesota to decide if it really wants this project enough to pay for it. And this that concludes my opening comments.
Mr. Hsu.
Witness.
Mr. Simpson.
No questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Kotsako, questions for Mr. Diller?
I did have a question, but Jerry went to get a copy of the order. We were just going to ask you about the previous order, so I'd like to maybe. He's back. Thanks, Jer. Mike, I just wanted to draw your attention to the commission's language in the order that you were just referencing the solar portfolio. I think your testimony or your summary said that the prudence was denied, but would you disagree with the language that I'm about to read to you? The commission orders NSP's application for an advanced determination of prudence is denied. We had said in the conclusions of law up above, NSP has not shown that the solar portfolio merits an advanced determination of prudence. Do you have any disagreement with that language?
I don't have any disagreement with the language the commission used.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Commissioners, questions? Mr. Diller?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike. You don't have any disagreements with what Alana just said, but would you have any improvements to offer?
I quite frankly, Commissioner, when I'm done testifying, I often take my material and close it up and put it in a file cabinet. And I used to get worked up about decisions the commission would reach that went against my recommendation. And I've long since learned that, when you're done presenting the evidence, you fold it up and you go on to the next project. I haven't thought about it enough. If you're getting to the point of whether or not there should be some way for the company to get back in the game with getting cost recovery for this project, I actually have the same view I think that Laura has. I think that ADP, the process of granting advanced determination of prudence, there's a purpose behind it, and that is if you approve it, then rate recovery is more or less assured. And so I'm just a simpleton. I think that if you deny it, then those cost recoveries are not assured and that there are rate implications and that, and in fact, I think somewhere in law it talks about prudency being determined when the decision was made. And if you make a decision before or at the time that that all of this is being considered and you deny it, to me, that is the moment in time when you close the door to cost recovery in North Dakota. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a simple guy trying to apply simple logic.
Mike, you said that if we didn't like the previous solar discussion, we really wouldn't like this one. And so should I advocate for even a stronger signal back saying that we should dismiss this thing with prejudice so we never see it again? What would your thoughts be about that? Is that better for North Dakota?
Well, you wouldn't have any arguments with me. I think this one's outside the box far enough that I wouldn't argue with you and I wouldn't be concerned with it.
So you're saying your position is that if we denied with prejudice, that would be fine for North Dakota ratepayers?
I think it would be just fine.
Thank you, Mike.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thanks, Mike. A couple questions in terms of what they're advocating for is as the qualitative benefits, the experience with solar and the diversity. What do you make of those qualitative benefits? What value do they have to customers?
Well, I kind of liken that to R&D, right? You can have differences of opinion about R&D. Should you be the first one to invest in trying to bring about a new innovative thing, or should you wait and hold back and get involved after a little bit of it's been done or all of it's been done? I would say this, that you can see the differences in the companies, with just the three companies that we regulate. Without naming names, I would think that one of our companies waits, another company's on the front end. The other one may be in the middle of cutting-edge research and development, playing around, so to speak, with, I think NSP bought a 1 megawatt battery, for Pete's sake. I mean, that was pretty much out there when they did that. And so I think that's part of your policy decision is to consider whether or not that resonates with you and with North Dakota.
How does it resonate with you as a consumer advocate?
Yeah, well, I prefer to wait a little while until and let the other people do the research and development and then tag along when solar energy becomes more cost-effective. And I've spent quite a bit of time, and you've heard their own witnesses more or less indicate that if we miss the 30% ITC now, it's probably not going to harm NSP if they wait until 2024 when they actually need capacity. And so, you know, I included things in my testimony like, and we've all seen them, flat-screen TVs, the development of iPhones and all the other things. The prices come down, and we all benefit from that.
So you're comfortable dismissing that benefit, right? It sounds like to me. the experience gained now on solar early.
Right. I would prefer to wait, given the facts that we've heard about capital costs expected to come down 45% by 2030. And it's not just the capital costs. It's the expected efficiencies in harvesting the sun rays. And so, you know, it's both things will work to bring down the cost of solar.
Okay. So you think there'll be more benefits to customers down the road, and from a consumer advocacy standpoint, you prefer to wait?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, that's an easy choice because they don't need capacity until 2024. So,
okay. And then on the diversity side of things, fuel diversity, resource diversity, what do you make of that benefit?
I would just as soon wait again until solar becomes more mainstream and more efficient, and just wait until we need it. I don't think we want to develop diversity in energy sources just to say that we have diversity. We of course want to work towards diversity when we actually need capacity in energy, but I don't think we diversify just so we can say we're diversified.
Okay. You heard some talk with previous witnesses about the reserve margin. With your testimony relies heavily on the comfort that there's a reserve margin required by MISO, and that they're meeting and even exceeding that. And they testified this morning that doesn't include forecasts being under what they might come in as actually. So you've had a lot of experience in this industry. How much do you think companies should be planning beyond their reserve margin to account for that? How much should regulators allow them to do that? Beyond the actual reserve margin, how much more should they be planning for and acquiring resources to cover?
I think my written testimony was pretty clear. I mean, we've embarked on this thing called MISO, a regional operating company to manage transmission and generation resources. And so, of course, you want to take full advantage of when you need electricity and another region doesn't, you can make use of their resources and vice versa. I think if you get to a point where, and which it seems to be where NSP's headed, that we're going to have enough generation to meet all of our obligations ourselves. And so when you do that, you kind of minimize the value of MISO. You minimize the value of sharing resources in a 15-state area. And so I just say this, that I think I said it in the solar portfolio hearing, and sorry to bother you with the same language, but MISO is tasked with making sure the lights stay on, and we either trust them or we don't, and I assume that we do to a large degree because we've gone along with it. We spend $0.25 billion a year on MISO in total to get the benefits of being able to share resources and have a market and all the things that the NSP witnesses have talked about. So I have a great deal of trust in MISO. Jerry is and Commissioner Kalk very tied into all that to make sure that the lights stay on. On top of that, we have great electric utility companies across the country. We have great electrical engineers that they wake up in the morning and all they think about is making sure that the lights stay on. We have the best electric system the world has ever known, and we, of course, want to keep it that way. But it does. But all of those things convince me that being scared about being a little short, maybe for a couple of years between now and 2024, doesn't affect me. It doesn't cause me to lose sleep.
Okay, and then to the commentary from Mr. Johnson about the companies, the whole competitive acquisition process. It sounded to me like, and I want you to tell me if you heard the same thing, that the company was saying to Minnesota, we don't need this. We think it would be more prudent to wait. And Minnesota said, no, we're going to go ahead with this. Is that what you heard? And is that what your analysis is looking at?
I mean, that's what I've read by reading some of the documents. I mean, let's face it, NSP's in a bit of a spot here, right? I mean, as your examination of Mr. Zimpser pointed out, you can appeal, but it's likely that you won't be reheard. And so clearly the Minnesota Commission is very heavy-handed, and I guess if I was a company that had billions of dollars invested in the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota Commission said this is the way it is, I might all of a sudden go, you know, in the big scheme of things, I guess it's not bad.
So if you were a regulator and heard a company say, we didn't think this was the best approach, but the Commission decided otherwise, and then we looked at it again and decided, well, maybe we can make it work. What would you do? Would you go along with that approach, or would you say, no, it doesn't work for us?
As a utility executive?
No, as a regulator. Because to me, it's looking at other regulators saying, you should do this, telling the company how they should, what's best for the company. Should the company experts know what's best for managing the company, or should the regulators?
Well, clearly you can tell by listening to me and listening to these people that they know more about it than I do. And that's because they're in the field and they're working every day, and I'm analyzing different things across the board, and I'm not as specialized, and I don't have the knowledge that they do. They have 10,000 employees. I have a couple. And so they definitely have the resources and the capabilities. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, sometimes what happens, I think, is that back myself into a corner here. Sometimes I think politicians get caught up with themselves, thinking that they know more than they really do, and so they insert themselves. And I think that's what's going on in Minnesota. It's the executives aren't even calling the shots on billion-dollar projects. It's the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota Commission, and of course the legislative laws and rules that are being passed over there. And you know, it's unfortunate because I think that the responsibility, the authority, belongs with companies, with the company's management, not in the hands of government officials.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Diller.
Mr. Christman.
Is it still okay to call you Mike, or is it David now with the 10,000 to 2? It seems like kind of a David and Goliath thing. Maybe.
That's part of the intrigue about my job. You know, it's a challenge. I mean, you have very capable people, and to take a position that is opposite of theirs is a challenge, and it's intriguing.
And how long have you been doing that challenging job for North Dakota?
For North Dakota, coming up 28 years in October.
Okay, this is getting to a point. In those 28 years, I've always been, before I came here and started learning what it takes to get to an electric bill, I was always fascinated how for some IOU billing sites that I work with, sometimes they're not used for whole months, and many times months are never the same. It's off a couple cents here or there, and there's this rider, and that one ends, and it's always different, and they're not round numbers, and it's right down to exact pennies, and things are added and ended at various times of the year in the middle of the month. Has it always been that precise in North Dakota's utility regulating industry? Or are you familiar with times where, you know, rather than having a rider be so many dollars and some cents, you just round it up so it's easier to figure and the people can pay a little bit more, or those kinds of things? Or has it always been very precise?
Well, I think it's always been very precise. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is I think we have a policy with respect to the fuel cost adjustment for natural gas companies, where if the cost doesn't change too much from one month to the next, then you just leave it alone. So you minimize, you know, those few customers that actually look at their bills and go, why did this change? But that's a very small, and that's the only one I can think of.
Does it seem like kind of a new practice that some neighboring states seem to be getting into, where instead of using that kind of precision in order to make sure that the consumers get the most affordable and the most dependable power, it's come down to kind of headline-seeking gimmicks of, you know, 20% by or 30% by 2020 and that kind of thing?
I don't know what to say to that, Randy. I mean, Commissioner.
It seems frustrating to me that, and I'm curious if you share in this, that decisions are being made about generation resources based on these little gimmicks rather than the kinds of traditional, very precise calculations that have built the great electrical system that you've talked about in this country over the course of decades, and we've just switched to coming out with a great headline and then doing whatever it takes to reach it.
Well, maybe that's why we're at loggerheads here a little bit. I think in their testimony they indicate that this project will only cost our customers 16 cents a month. I haven't reviewed that. I have to trust that that's a good number. But, you know, 16 cents for that and 20 cents for the solar portfolio. And, I mean, it seems like, okay, Mike, why are you working so hard to save customers 16 cents a month? Who cares? I think every decision leads to another decision and another decision. And you can go down the wrong path if you decide I'm just going to poke a little hole in this dam. So that's why I work hard. I work hard to, even if it's a small amount of money.
Well, thanks for your work on behalf of the advocacy, your advocacy work on behalf of the people. So, no other questions?
My pleasure.
Mr. Semser, I guess Mr. Hsu, maybe it's back to you. I kind of lost track.
I have nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
I have nothing, thanks.
Mr. Simpson.
Nothing, Your Honor.
Commissioners, I guess Mr. Diller, you can step down.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hsu, any other presentation today?
Your Honor, I don't think I need much of a closing after Mr. Diller up there. I think he clearly stated everything needs to be said.
You don't have any additional witnesses to call?
Nothing.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco? Do you have any witnesses to call?
We do not. Thank you.
Okay. Back to you, Mr. Simpson. Any rebuttal testimony?
We have no rebuttal. We rest.
Okay. Mr. Hsu? Rest.
I rest, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have nothing. Thanks.
Okay. We will get together on late filed exhibits off the record. Subject to the five and late file exhibits, closing comments from the commissioners. Commissioner Kalk or Commissioner Fedorchuk, Chairman Fedorchuk. You probably should go first with the closing comments.
Ladies in the chair first.
Right. Well, thanks, everybody, for another interesting hearing and another interesting discussion of some pretty amazing times that we're in. Certainly dynamic in the industry with so many changing technologies and changing regulations and differing jurisdictions, so much to sort through and sort out. And I really appreciate the pickle that your company is in. It's even a bigger pickle than I realized before today. But I think from my perspective, I learned a lot. I appreciate all the time that the witnesses took explaining the issues, the planning process. You know, I learned a lot today about how the system is designed and put together, and we'll, you know, have a lot more information to make the decision. So appreciate that time and I don't think that it'll, you know, be a real lengthy deliberation for us in getting back to you with the decision on this matter. It's pretty clear cut, in my opinion, and some of what the company has said itself, I think, provides the greatest direction for my decision making, and so I trust your guys' instincts in this regard, and look forward to wrapping this up quickly.
Mr. Christman, I'm going to let you. I'm going to give Commissioner Kalk the last word.
Wow, I didn't expect to go that quickly. I have not a lot to add. I think I kind of expressed it in my questions to Mr. Diller. When the way the world is now, governments need to work kind of hand in hand because, especially in the utility industry. These utilities cover multiple states, and that's just a reality, and it's really a good thing in most cases. But when certain governments start kind of throwing out logic in favor of headlines and making their decision based on some kind of gimmick that was thrown out at one point that that sounded good rather than a careful analysis of what it takes to make sure that people have dependable and affordable power, it becomes rather frightening and I think very damaging to the consumers. So I'm going to weigh all this some more. I kind of feel like I know where I want to go with this particular decision, but as I always do, I like to step away from it for a day or two and give it some more careful consideration to make sure I haven't missed anything. But I, as the chairman said, I expect to be able to reach a decision relatively quickly.
Mr. Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'll be kind of finish where I began this morning, just thanking the company and everyone else, the advocacy staff, for putting together a good case. And, you know, it's the same of Xcel is doing a very good job in North Dakota. You've got good cities you're working on, doing things really, 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 really well. And whatever comes out of this case, the next ones, I think we need to keep that relationship because Mr. Diller set it up, I think, very well that my first meeting in the commission in January 2009 was we opened up Pandora's box about all those problems in Thompson. Remember that day with the billing? And it was very hard to get any good data out of Xcel at that time and for a lot of different reasons. And I'll tell you that here we sit now, and Mike said it's very easy to communicate, and the only way we're going to get through all of this is this constant communication of understanding your position, you understand where we're at, we'll let this multi-state stuff sort itself out, but it's very important to have the trust in the communication, and I think really that's really improved over the last 6-7 years, and so thank Laura for you've been a big leader in all that. And we're going to need to keep doing this because whatever happens in this solar case, it's not the end of it. This 111D thing is going to chug through the next 2-3 years. It's also pipelines. I know you're trying to figure out what natural gas services to provide over in Fargo and that part of the state. And even in all of our other hearings, it's not just these electricity cases that are getting more challenging. Our pipeline cases are getting more challenging, you know, all kinds of things. So it's really important that you put together good cases, very candid and upfront, and we'll do the same here. And I agree with both my colleagues. We'll get the work session scheduled pretty quickly, and I don't anticipate very long to come out with a decision on this. So thank you.
Mr. Simpson, any closing remarks? I guess I may have jumped on your opportunity to give a...
Well, absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff-Butzak?
No remarks.
Anything else for the good of the record before I close the hearing? Okay, we'll close the hearing.
Your Honor. Excuse me. Before you close the hearing, though, are you going to come back on and itemize the late filed exhibits and stuff so it is on
we could
the recording?
Do that. Why don't we just go off the record for 5 minutes or so, and then we'll come back and do that. Okay. We're back on the record, counsel. Back on the record just to finish out the record on the late filed exhibits with discussion off the record. Number one will be a MISO cost-benefit analysis. Number two would be we kind of referred to it as a cheat sheet, but Minnesota laws and goals and dates, how that works. Number three, how does a solar cost flow to Wisconsin from NSP? Number four, the table one on page 10, update, which also includes a North Dakota view of table 10. Number five is the advice or impact of ADP, how an ADP works and as far as into the future and whether the case can be brought again or if it affects the rate case permanently or if that's an open question. And then number six is some background and additional information on the Minnesota competitive bidding process. Also off the record, we discussed proposed findings from council, and we agreed that July 30th would be a reasonable date, using the lawyer term reasonable as opposed to what does reasonable mean, which is volumes in the law library downstairs, as we all know. But July 30th, proposed findings from both council. Anything else we need for the record, Mr. Simpson?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Archer? Okay. Mr. Hsu?
None from advocacy staff, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Galasacco?
Not from me, thanks.
Okay, then I'm going to close the hearing on the application of NSP for an ADP. PU number 15-95 is closed, subject to the aforementioned filing of late filed exhibits. Thank you all very much.